Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Thank you for joining me for today's SMIE Consulting Midweek Roundup. I'm your host, Marty Bennett, and today on the Roundup, we're going to be taking a look at three questions that we're all asking this week in international education. It's been an interesting week. For those of you who are followers of the Roundup, you know we keep a close eye on all legal proceedings that impact our field, and also want to celebrate the personal successes of those in our profession that have contributed so much to where we are today. And we'll do all that and more today on the Roundup. But first, I want to give a big shout out to everybody who's watching live here on Facebook or on repeat on the Facebook page for SMIE Consulting or on our YouTube channel watching the replays there. So thank you for being a part of it. Also, those of you listening on the podcast, making us a regular part of your routine. We really appreciate having your input at these live events, but also the time that you take out of your schedules to watch or listen to us and what we have to say here about our profession, international education. So today, as we do each week, we take a look at the news of the week. We start each week by looking at our SMIE Consulting e-newsletter called All the SMIE News Fit to Share. That stands for Social Media and International Ed News. And we pick two or three stories, typically three stories from the International Ed feed, and look at how they are impacting our field, how our industry has responded, that type of thing. And we ask three questions each week that these articles begin to answer. First, we take the questions, and then we go a little bit next level and see how institutions are responding or how, as a profession, we're responding to these issues and concerns of the day. And today is no different, though, as we did last week, the news of the week that popped in with the student ban on the DHS ruling on Monday, July 10th last week, or July 6th or 7th, is late on the 6th is when the ruling came out, and then subsequent guidance on the 7th. And that's, we'll talk about the impact of that. And in our first question, how much of a success, and yes, it has been a success, that the student ban that was initially proposed on the 6th of July has been rescinded just over a week later. And this is lightning fast as far as rulings of this kind to have been done, and we'll take a look at what that means and how much of a success that process has actually been for our field, the fact that we have to go through it, notwithstanding. But also we'll look at a related piece of that and maybe broaden the conversation a bit in looking at what is the power of advocacy in international education. And this is certainly increasingly a part of our daily routines now, is making sure our elected officials, our campuses are aware of how the wider world and decisions that are made by our government are impacting what we do on a day-to-day basis. And finally, we'll take a look at how Canada is thriving in this current environment. And certainly, I'll be sharing a couple of examples of how that's actually manifesting itself. In light of what we do in the United States compared to what's going on north of the border. So let's get right to it. So first question, how much of a success is the student ban repeal? All of us who had first heard the news last week about the new DHS SEVP guidance or rule, temporary final rule going into effect last week, the reaction from the higher ed community institutions across the country, well over 100 institutions put out statements and policies and started thinking creatively about how they could rally against this new government policy that had been thrown in rather arbitrarily and capriciously by the government. And as I commented to several colleagues when asked about this, it's these kinds of things from the initial travel bans back in January 2017 when the Trump administration was first in office the day after the inauguration, the first travel bans went out. Since that time, in a post I shared last week, I documented those the various decisions that have been made, and I might have missed a couple, that have really served as complete PR disasters for our country, frankly, as it relates to international education and us being a welcoming destination. This all harkens back to the You Are Welcome Here campaign that was launched immediately after the election to address prospective students and their parents about their concerns related to studying in the U.S. In this age of Trump. And certainly the decision last week, certainly back in the initial travel bans, there was a lot of uproar and efforts to change those bans and to repeal those bans, although they ultimately weren't successful in eliminating the bans. The ban that was eventually upheld by the Supreme Court for national security reasons was a much more focused one than the initial one that had gone out. So, but that was a lot of pushback from the higher ed community and associations related to higher education that really helped at least make the case for international ed and really took advocacy to a much more prominent role in a lot of international educators' lives if it hadn't already been. And today I'll be sharing through the course of this discussion and answering these questions, some articles that pop up that relate to these topics, and certainly I'll share those links in the Facebook comment section on our Facebook page. So feel free to follow up with those links for more detailed examples of what we're talking about today. The first article that I'll reference, I look at four or five major sources each week for the main headline news and news for the our newsletter and also our chats here. First is the Pi News, Chronicle, Times Higher Ed, and Inside Higher Ed. Those are my four kind of initial go-tos for the banner headlines. And looking at those four, Pi News has theirs as related to this repeal of the ban yesterday. U.S. government backtracks on online study international student ban. Chronicle says U.S. rescinds visa policy that could have forced colleges to hold some classes in person. Times Higher Ed says Trump retreats from threat to deport international students. And then finally, Inside Higher Ed, government rescinds international student policy. Obviously, they take the headlines tell you a lot about the nature of the tone of the articles, and certainly we'll be sharing. Certainly, you can read whatever you want into these particular titles in terms of where they're coming from, but certainly. I think what the backtracking and the rescission and the retreat the overall tone of the article certainly paint this quite correctly as a defeat for the administration. So what I often told colleagues is a lot of this, and I've shared this in some interviews before, a lot of what has happened with these various actions and rulings that have gone up and bans is that the decisions when these are made are kind of the red meat that the current administration throws to their base, electoral base, that they think are completely anti-immigrant and supportive of a very closed America and an America first to the exclusion of the rest of the world type of an attitude. Those policies that this administration has thrown against the wall to see what sticks, not all of them work, but the impact it has to the base of keeping them loyal and to show that, yes, we're following up on our campaign promises on America First and all of that. We didn't realize how significant this America First policy and the extension to which it would be taken, extent to which it would be taken during the first few years of this administration. But certainly the tone of all of these articles certainly reflects that this is a defeat for the current administration, and I think is a welcome one. Frankly, in my article last week, I shared how demoralizing the last 3.5 years have been to our field, international education, and how a victory like this in such a short span of time since it was first announced represents hopefully a turning point a turning point in our nation's approach towards international education and the value it still holds to our country, and hopefully a turning point in the policy that I don't think it will be. I think there are going to be attempts to chip away again at other things like OPT, and that's been on the radar for a couple, 3 years now of this administration and other policies. But the Pi News article, I was actually quoted in, that came out this morning. I was obviously sharing that this is a real much needed boost for the U.S. international education community. But it's also it's also been the first kind of public success that our community has had in beating back some of the the unlawful presence ruling went our way as well. But so to happen so quickly is it's the first time that that certainly happened in 3.5 years. And the fact that when I was listening into the actual hearing yesterday, where Judge Burroughs basically, the whole thing lasted less than 5 minutes. Basically, found out who the litigants in the room were, who was representing them, and who on both sides. And the MIT Harvard case that was got fast tracked. That there were all this series of lawyers that from New England and from the Boston area that were listed. And then for the government, it was just one person, one lawyer. And apparently there was an agreement reached, and this is a first, frankly, that to perhaps a demonstration of just how out of sync that decision or the decision to put together this ruling was from the administration. It wasn't actually didn't go to trial. It wasn't actually or wasn't a decision actually reached by where the judge was making the decision. It was. The two parties had agreed to, well, maybe we overstretched and we're going to rescind this order based on the case that the institutions had outlined, and they pushed back. So this process was very interesting to see, to listen to, and see the subsequent reaction in the press about what the meaning was. But the fact that the government's attorneys didn't even fight for the ruling, which is, I think, a clear indication that it was an overstretch, and the government is forced to back down in light of multi-state lawsuits, multiple associations, and hundreds of amicus briefs being filed by institutions and associations in support of these various lawsuits, whether it's the California one, the MIT Harvard one, or others that were already being filed. But this rescission and agreement to withdraw the rule, basically, and roll it back to the guidance first given in March 13th, that allowed international students to stay, to continue to take online classes, and even from their home countries, and maintain status for currently enrolled international students. That is just everything we could have expected from a ruling like this. In fact, it was since there wasn't anything to add in other concerns about at the moment of how it was impacting international education and other parts of it, like for new international students that are coming in, or for currently enrolled students that were abroad that might be completing their degrees and looking to begin OPT, and whether they're still eligible for that. We'll talk a little bit more about that a little bit later on, but. This is, frankly, a very significant moment for our field, a turning of the tide, perhaps, but certainly not the last battle we're going to have to face before the November elections. But certainly, I'll share all the links to the articles, but also talk about the impact of our industry rising up and expanding our allies. In this, and our supporters in Congress and in various offices of this administration to really show their support for international students. And because we know our students don't have a political voice in this country, they can't vote. The ones that we take care of on our campuses, we are their advocates. And that leads us very, very nicely into our second question of the day, and that is how, what is the power of advocacy in international education? And I don't think there's a better example, other than the long fight for the Simon Act to promote U.S. study abroad. Obviously took a lot longer time, but I don't think there has been, certainly in my time in international education over the last 27 years, I don't think there's been a time where as a community, as an international ed community, we rose up to fight back clearly a capricious, a cruel, inhumane, dangerously dumb, I love that phrasing from one former international student, ruling that, as I alluded to in my quote in the Pi News article, is that it's been a cumulative effect of rulings and us having to fight back the PR damage that these kind of rulings have to prospective students and parents overseas, to our key audiences overseas that are looking to us to be the supporters of international ed in this country for our international visitors. And that's this is really a landmark day, I think, this ruling yesterday, to roll back without an argument being filed. They made their case, but they realized it was going to be a losing battle, the government did, and they pulled it off completely. So it's really it's a moment to savor, but certainly it's not going to be the last fight we're going to have before November. Let's hope November is the end of it. But what we're facing now hopefully can capture and direct the energy of the international ed community when it comes to advocacy. I know we preach about that almost weekly here on the Roundup, is when these issues come up and when there are battles to be fought and there are members of Congress that you need to be in regular communication with, because if these are issues that are important to you, you need to have that, let your voice be heard. And there are a lot of different ways that that can happen. We saw that certainly in the days immediately after the ruling came down last Monday, a week ago Monday on the 6th. You saw the lawsuits by MIT and Harvard being filed almost immediately. You saw UC system doing something similar, and then states rallying together, 18 states filing suit against the government because of the impact this ruling would have on international students and our higher ed institutions. This government likes to play politics and likes to bait and switch. And one of the things that came out immediately after, it became clear that universities and higher ed associations were rising up against the administration. The administration throws out the possibility, President Trump tweeted out that he's directing the Department of Education to review tax-exempt status, or Treasury Department to review tax-exempt status of institutions that are far left, or that are seen as indoctrinating students. How that ever gets proven is beyond me. But it's another threat, certainly not one that's going to be see the light of day anytime soon, but certainly one that represents kind of the petulance of this administration when it comes to when it doesn't get its way. And throwing their toys out the pram, as we like to say in the UK, it's really our advocacy made a difference here. You saw, excuse me, posted the link to David Komp and several of his collaborators in Chicago and elsewhere of institutional responses to the ban that was put in place, well over 100 institutions that were documented there. You saw a separate list that was maintained by others in the ISSS community that shared international students or responses by institutions to that, levels of responses, what their plans were, whether they're filing a lawsuit or an amicus brief and that type of thing. So that was happening. We saw two major petitions, one on change.org, that received, looking at the numbers for that change.org one, we saw, I think there's over almost 25,000 signatures on that petition. There's also the White House whitehouse.org or .gov petition to allow F1 students to stay in the U.S. Through the fall semester instruction, if instruction is online as a result of the pandemic. That received over 279,000 signatures, over 250,000 in the first 4 days. And so really, I think the damage was done early for this administration in terms of realizing, oh my goodness, we overstretched. And the advocacy that was done, the petitions that were signed, the emails to and tweets and letters to members of Congress, even the Republican congressional delegation, there was a group of them that's similar to what had happened with the attempt to preserve OPT that was successful a couple weeks ago when the L1s, J1s, and H1Bs were suspended for the rest of the calendar year. That group of Republicans, a number of them, also signed on to something fighting this ban as well, the student ban. So that there's a lot of positive momentum that's been built up is what I'm getting to here with this advocacy question. And does it matter? Absolutely. It is essential in our work in this environment that we be fighting the good fight. Not only it's not our jobs, but it is. It's not part of our job descriptions, but it is. It is an essential component of what we do as international educators to educate our institutions, our organizations, our communities, our elected leadership of the value of our international students to our campuses, our students and scholars to what we do, and our countries. And our country that has benefited so incredibly over the years from immigrants who have come either as students who then become entrepreneurs and leaders of multi-billion dollar companies here in the United States. They see this country even still as a destination for them, as a place for them to fulfill their dreams. And I've shared many times on the roundup how our family came to the United States as my dad was an L1 intercompany transfer from his company in the UK to the world headquarters in St. Louis. Where we moved, and right now we wouldn't be allowed back into, we wouldn't be allowed into the country if we were coming new to the U.S. in 2020, as opposed to 1974 when we did make that journey successfully. So there's so much in our nation's history that points to the value of where we are a nation of immigrants, whether you go with the melting pot or salad bowl concept of our nation. The fact is we're built as a nation of immigrants, and they are our greatest success stories. So we need to fight for that in everything we do. And though this administration in many of its forms and many of its people who lead and initiate these kind of policies don't believe that anymore. And that's a shame. And it's something that we can't lose because it is very much a part of our identity as Americans. So advocacy is essential. It is, if it's not a part of job descriptions for future staff that you hire, if it's not part of your job description, make it a part of your position moving forward to establish that as an important value your institution, your job, your department, your office holds for supporting what we do as a field. So international advocacy. Advocacy must continue, and there will be further battles to have. We can savor this victory today, but we know it's not the last one we're going to have to fight. Now, one country in our, as we get to our last question of the day, how is Canada thriving in the current environment? I'll be sharing a particular story in reference to last week's travel ban. This came out almost the day after, it was actually announced earlier, I think in May, but it became official that Canada was announcing a major shift in their work change for fall 2020, that students who had to go online as a result of the pandemic were able to completed their program all or in part online, is that they would be eligible for the post-study work permits, post-graduation work permit in Canada. I saw that article that was reposted last week after the study ban ruling came down on the 6th, and that was certainly indicates that they have positioned themselves as being sympathetic to international educators, to international students as an important part of their country. They've set up their immigration plan, immigration policy in Canada to develop a clear pathway for those kinds of students, for international students who want to have a clear path from study to work to residency. That's their policy, and that reflects what certainly many international educators in the U.S. would hope the U.S. moves towards eventually. But the reality is they're kicking our butt when it comes to that. The policies that they've developed over the years, particularly in the current administration with the Trudeau versus Trump, you see those, there couldn't be a more stark difference in terms of their attitudes towards immigrants, towards study for those from overseas. Canada put into place this ruling. They have also come to recruit international students for their programs from U.S. campuses over the last few years. They've increasingly made those kind of moves. And I saw an amazing sign from a colleague, Sharif Barsoom at New York University. And Sharif is an absolute leader in our field, certainly a great thought leader, but someone I have a great deal of respect for. But he posted something on his Facebook feed earlier today, and he doesn't certainly mind me sharing that one. But we saw the ruling a couple, 3 weeks ago related to H-1Bs and L-2s, L-1s and J-1s. And it's actually, he posted a picture of a billboard from someone else in Silicon Valley. It has Canada and a big maple leaf. It says, H-1B problems? Pivot to Canada. New startup visa, low taxes, immigration.gc.ca/startup. So Canada clearly is after the best and brightest that are studying here too and looking to poach them, ones that are already in the U.S. working from abroad who could be great assets to Canada as well. And that is just tells you everything you need to know about how our country's position compared to Canada's right now. They see an advantage and they are certainly going for it. I understand completely why they're doing that. It's a no-brainer as far as I'm concerned. But the reality is our efforts do matter. And what our government does certainly impacts what we do in international education. And for the most part, the last 3.5 years, there haven't been many bright spots in our field. And yesterday is certainly one of those that I'm going to hold on to for at least the rest of this administration, however short that lasts. But in terms of our value, in terms of what government decisions make, not only impact us, they impact future students that might be looking to study here, their parents, those that are already here that might be scared off of staying. And that's happening. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. The cumulative negative impact of what our government has done over the last 3.5 years to our field has had global consequences in terms of destination markets, in terms of scholarship programs, in terms of positions at our institutions that have been dedicated to international education have been eliminated. Director positions now become coordinator positions. Roles get minimized. And this is happening not just at small liberal arts colleges. It's happening across the board in our industry. You see international education getting minimized because institutions have to react to the public policy and government policies that are impacting their field. And bottom lines for institutions are more often than not driven by tuition dollars, and when tuition dollars are down and areas that are impacted most are looked at, and when international is one of those, then, well, that's where some cuts need to happen. For good or bad, that's what happens, and obviously that's bad in our impression, and short-sighted in many cases, but when institutions have as their primary motive, bottom line motivation being dollars and cents, and the quality of the student body, the quality of the education received tend to become secondary, then that's where the impacts are truly felt across the board. But Canada, as we've talked about, is certainly thriving right now as a direct result of what we've been doing in the U.S. They obviously have set up their policies to be much more favorable to international students and international overseas visitors and potential immigrants than our system. And we're paying the price for that in our field. And that's just how those things work. We had a victory yesterday. We're going to savor it for now, but we're going to be ready and hopefully better equipped now to fight the coming battles we're going to have. So I want to thank everybody for joining me today on the Roundup, and looking forward to having some great conversations with you down the road. Special shout out to Marjorie Smith from University of Denver, who received the Peter Howitt Distinguished Service Award, Lifetime Achievement Award, basically, for International ACAC as they round up their virtual conference this week. It's very sad that there has not been a virtual dodgeball tournament at International ACAC this year, but looking forward to getting back together with everybody next year in Albuquerque for the next conference. So have a great day, everybody. Look forward to seeing you soon. Cheers.